is Ask an Attorney, all about Florida law with attorney Joe Pippin. If you have a legal question, call Joe right now in Tampa. Call 813-287-5700. Anywhere else, toll free at 877-943-9673. That's 877-943-9673. The law office is open. And now your host, Joe Pippin.
Hey, good morning. Welcome to Ask an Attorney, all about Florida law. I'm attorney Joe Pippin, practicing attorney. The law office is open. Open just for you. If you have a legal question, I'm here to help. If you have a problem, I'm here to help. Come in every Saturday morning at this time and do Ask an Attorney. It's a live show where you can call in and ask your legal questions. Sole purpose is just to help people understand legal issues, get them pointed in the right direction. It's a 52-minute straight run, no commercials during this show, and all we do is give out the phone number and try to help you by answering your question. So if you have a question, it can be about wills, trust, probate, guardianship, power of attorneys, healthcare surrogates, real estate problems, family law situations, personal injury. It can be just about any area of law. And if I know the answer, I would quickly share it with you. If I don't know the answer, hey, I fess up right away, let you know that I don't know, but I can give you some general direction and get another source, you know, outside of myself or my law firm to help you. 877 is the toll-free number, 877-943-9673. Always like that first call coming in. So if you have something on your mind, you want to get a little help or information, 877-943-9673. And phone lines are open. First two calls are coming in as I speak right now. So as soon as my producer jumps on those, there he goes. He will get you on the air. If a lot of our show information or a lot of the questions we get are actually on estate planning, and if you have a question about a will or a trust or a power of attorney or a healthcare surrogate or a living will, any of those type of informations, most common question to probably get is my out-of-state document good in the state of Florida. I reviewed a couple this week that were not. Now, a lot of times they are. A lot of times we just need an amendment or a codicil or a change to it, some slight change to make it work better. Met a couple that weren't properly done for Florida law. Florida wouldn't recognize them. And, of course, we get the ones once in a while where people try to do it themselves. And a lot of times those fail. They try to do it online themselves or get some documents somewhere. Sometimes they're not witnessed or notarized correctly. Sometimes there are a lot of other little issues that come up. All right, again, you're listening to Ask an Attorney, all about Florida law. I'm attorney Joe Pippin, practicing attorney. Law office is open, 877-943-9673. Phone lines are open. So if you have a legal question, give me a call. And so I'll go ahead. If my producers are listening, I'll just take the call on the one blindly. All right. Where can't get the information on the board of who it is, actually. So, all right. Hello. Welcome to Ask an Attorney. What can I do for you? Yes.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead. What's your name?
Oh, my name is Russ.
Russ, okay. Where are you from?
Fruit Cove, Florida, just south of Jacksonville.
All right, very good. I know exactly where that is. So what can I do for you?
I've been out of a company for just under a year now, and I left. It was under horrible conditions, mental health kind of stuff. The CEO of the court brought in a friend who was clinically diagnosed with a lot of mental health issues. I was the president of the company, and when they brought me in, I'm a disabled veteran. It was a service-disabled veteran-owned small business in Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And I have PTSD, traumatic brain injury, spine injuries. I'm 90% disabled. So pretty much they brought me in to take over the company because they needed to secure the contracts for their disability rating. was there for a year. Then he brought this guy on, and he was totally disruptive and made my clinical symptoms go off the charts. I complained about it. I asked several times to the board to have the guy removed. They wouldn't do it. After about a little over a year of him being there, I couldn't take it anymore. And when I left, and you know, and I told him, I was like, you know, you guys drove me out. And since then, I said it's been a little under a year since I left. I haven't been able to, you know, get a job. My trust is gone completely from corporate America, because I really got hammered by this company. And I'm just wondering if there's anything I can do on the legal side.
Well, let me ask a couple questions. Did you have an employment contract?
Yes, we did.
You had a written employment contract?
Yes.
But did you voluntarily quit on your own?
I did. I resigned. Yes.
All right. But do you feel like you resigned because you had some discrimination against you?
Absolutely.
And what would that have been exactly?
I don't know if you would call it discrimination, but it was a hostile work environment, and I just I couldn't function anymore.
All right, so you had an employment. So did you try to negotiate your employment contract when you left?
Yes, I did.
And what did they tell you?
Well, they said that they would keep me as a 1099 for 1 year, and then that would be it.
And did you accept that?
Yes, I did at the time. Yeah.
All right.
So I pretty much screwed myself, I guess.
Well, you know, in the short time you and I are going to talk, I'm not sure I would come to a final decision on that. I think you should probably have an employment attorney review your original employment contract and then the modification of it, and you discuss maybe in more detail the circumstances of the environment there and see if they have some course of action they can try to figure out for you to proceed with. So that's what I would recommend you do is just sit down with an employment attorney, look at both contracts, the modification, express to him what the working conditions were, and see what they can come up with. It's good and bad. If you didn't have an employment contract or anything in writing at all, they had the right to terminate you regardless. You had one, so if they violated that in some way along the way, if they violated the contract themselves, of course, the attorney's going to have to look at it. You might have a course of action there as well.
Okay, great.
All right.
Thank you.
All right, Russ, thanks for calling. All right, thanks. That call is from Jacksonville. We do have an office in Jacksonville. We go there on a regular basis. We have an office there in Ponte Vedra. So you're listening to WBOB in Jacksonville. You're listening to multiple stations around the state of Florida. We're broadcasting from Tampa today. And out of the Salem family of stations, 570-910, Faith Talk, 860, 930, multiple stations here in Tampa Bay today. Let's go to Mark in Clearwater. Hey,
Good
Mark.
Good morning.
Hey, Mark, how are you?
Good morning. Good. Hey, I had a trust question. My father passed away, I guess it's been 6 years ago now, and in the trust he left a home out of state to us four children.
Mm-hmm.
And we kept the home for those years. And in the meantime, we had done a bunch of improvements to it. We were thinking about renting it out and, you know, generating rental income to pay for all of its expenses. But that never really worked out. So we ended up selling the property this past year. What are going to be the tax implications on that for our taxes this year, if any?
Well, upon the sale, the property got a stepped-up cost basis on the date of your father's when he died.
Okay.
So you start with that value. It got a stepped-up value. Even if he paid $100 for it and it was worth $500 when he died, you get the $500,000 cost basis as a starting point. And then you look at the gain from the date of death value as to the date of sale value, and there would be a capital gains tax applied to it.
Okay, does that subtract any improvements that were made to the property?
You can subtract, yes.
Okay. And if we were to go to an accountant, would that be handled, because there's four people involved in this, how does that work when there's so many involved in the trust? Is it split amongst the four, or how does that work?
Well, did the property stay in the trust, or was it deeded out to the four of you as tenants in common?
No, it was in the trust. The property was in the trust, and we were all beneficiaries of the trust.
All right, so the trust is going to sell the property then?
Yes.
Well, I think then accountant probably has several choices on how to choose that, but one choice would be to let the trust pay the tax, the capital gains tax.
Mm-hmm.
And probably all of the income passed through to you guys from the trust? How did that work on the income? Was there income?
Well, there really wasn't any income, because as it turned out, you know, the house got to be, you know, we put, you know, several thousand dollars in, probably close to $50,000 in the property, which made it, you know, pretty decent. And some people involved did not want to rent it because they didn't want other people in there and possibly, you know, tear up what they just spent all the money on to repair and fix up.
Did the accountant get a tax number for the trust when your father passed away?
I don't know. We didn't even do anything, honestly.
All right. Well, the accountant will look at the whole situation and decide the best way for you guys to pay the tax. There will be a capital gains tax from the date of death value to the date of sale value.
Okay.
And that might be that he would choose to have the trust pay the tax, or it might choose that he would pass through the tax to you individually as they distribute the money from the sale to you guys. The accountant probably has a few choices there. I'll just look at it and make the best one for you, best decision for you.
How do they base the time of the death property value? Just go back and look at records, city records, tax bases, or what?
Yeah, the accountant will have a way to do that. But you can look on the county records as to what the taxes were, and then there's usually a multiplier because the actual tax value is not always the current market value.
Okay.
There'll be real estate records of sales of other properties in the area. There are multiple ways to come up with the value of the property. I'm sure the CPA will choose the best one.
All right, I really appreciate it. Thank you much.
All right, thank you.
All right, bye.
Let's go to Robert in Buffalo, New York.
Yes, good morning, Joe. My situation is I own a condo in St. Petersburg for the last 22 years. It's in my name, but I'm a New York State resident. I'm what they call a snowbird.
Okay.
So I'm thinking about putting the condo into a trust, making my son the beneficiary. Now, he's a full-time Florida resident for the last 30 years. Now, do I do that in Florida? Would they do that transaction in Florida or up here in New York?
Well, do you have a trust in New York?
No.
Well, okay, so you have multiple ways to do that. I create trusts for people who live in other states who own real estate in Florida, including clients from Canada. And what sometimes they'll do is they'll just create a trust just for that property.
What I want to do.
Yeah, they'll create a Florida trust for your Florida condo and put the Florida condo in the trust and leave it to your son. And you could the rest of your estate plan could be done in New York if you wish. You probably could create a trust in New York if you wanted to and put the Florida property into the Florida trust and leave it to your son. You have multiple choices, but I do trust for clients who want to create a trust just for a Florida property, even if they live in, you know, Europe or Canada or somewhere and they have real estate in Florida. That's the best way to proceed.
Okay. Now, any idea of what the cost of a trust is or something like that?
A standalone trust with just one property, we charge $550.
Okay. But so my question is, do I do it there or here, Joe? I'm a little confused.
You could do it either way. I mean, you can do it.
Doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't matter.
Okay.
We do trust all the time. You know, I, to tell you the truth, though, I have people from New York who come to Florida that live, you know, New York some, in Florida some. They'll come, they hear what my fees are, and you can shop around in New York for what a trust would cost you, but don't be surprised if it's $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000. I've had several clients come to New York, and you know, I would charge a lot less than that, and then they spend the extra money on their vacation when they come to Florida.
Yeah. Okay.
So.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Joe.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Bye bye.
Phone. If you'd like to call, ask an attorney all about Florida law. You have a toll free number, 877-943-9673. 877-943-9673. Phone lines are open. And a lot of times it's good to shop around for attorney fees. Not all attorneys charge the exact same amount. And you can compare, make two or three calls from people you know that are experienced and see what their fees are. Some attorneys have flat fees like we do. Some attorneys don't have flat fees. They want to talk to you first and analyze everything. A lot of times there's a fee for the first visit to do that. We don't charge for that either. We don't charge for a first visit to come in and chat and understand your options and make a choice. Hey, you're listening to Ask an Attorney All About Florida Law. I'm Attorney Joe Pippin. You have a toll-free number, which is 877-943-9673. That's 877-943-9673. Phone lines are open. Let's go to John in Zephyr Hills.
Good morning.
Hey, sir.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Good, thank you. I have a question about a living trust my brother set up before he passed away earlier this year. He went to a Florida Living Trust Incorporated and set up a living trust. And we thought everything was pretty much settled. He put his assets in there. He owned a couple of vans and he put his home in there. And so we've been in the process of settling everything. I am named as first trustee. I recently tried to put his home on the market and I was told that a living trust ends with the death of the person who made it. And then I'm not able to sell the home unless I had my name on the deed or unless I went through probate. I was told at the time we made out the trust. That,
no, you were told that by who?
The attorney who made the trust. That it, the one that told me it was no good at this point in time was a local realtor.
Well, what he told you is not true. A living trust is a document created by, well, let's say you created a trust. The living trust is created by you when you're living. And when you pass away, your living trust is still living, and anything in that trust would avoid probate. So whoever told you a trust was not valid upon death would be not correct.
Well, that's what I was hoping you'd say. They said, unless my name was on the title, or unless it went through probate, I could not sell his home.
All right, so the company you mentioned was not a law firm.
No, it was a local realtor.
A local realtor created the trust.
No. They're the ones that I contacted to sell the home.
Okay, but it sounded like the company, I've heard of the company before, the company that created the trust was not a law firm.
There was an attorney who set it up, yes.
Oh, there was, okay.
Yes.
Okay, was there a deed prepared from your brother, from himself to himself, as trustee of his trust?
That I don't remember.
Okay, well, that's a key part of it. Because, see, once you create a trust, you do what's called a quitclaim deed. Most of the time, it's a quitclaim deed. And that's a deed from the person who created the trust to himself as trustee of his own trust. And then that deed, that while he's living or upon death, even upon death, it can be recorded. And that's what puts the property in the trust that allows the successor trustee, you, to be able to sell the property. So there would have had to have been a trust created and the deed transferred to the trust. The deed at some point gets recorded, and that's when you need to take over upon death, the deed hasn't been recorded. You find the deed, record the deed, and then you would have the power, as granted to you in the trust document, to sell the property.
So, in other words, what you're saying is that the living trust does not die when the person who made it out.
Yeah, correct. It's a fancy will. I mean, you create a will. The will doesn't die upon death. The will swings into action upon death. If you have a will, though, and die, it goes through probate. If you have a living trust and die with assets in the trust is still living, then you have the power granted to you by the trust document itself to be able to sell the property.
Very good. Very good. Well, thank you so much for your information.
All right. I have an office in Zephyr Hills. If you want an attorney there to review that for you, his name is Dennis Moses, runs that office. But we do have an office in your city there.
Do you happen to know the address?
I don't have it with me, but if you want to contact me, if you want to send me an email with your name and phone number, I'll have Mr. Moses give you a call if you like and set up an appointment.
Okay, that sounds good.
All right, I'll give out my information in just a few minutes, right after I talk to Jack here.
All right, thank you so much.
All right, thank you. Let's go to Jack in St. Petersburg.
Good morning, Jack.
Yeah, good morning.
I have a real estate-related question also.
Okay.
My wife and I are buying a condo. And I have a revocable trust that you updated a few years ago. Does not have a trust.
Say that again. You married someone? You have a trust, but
you've been married.
Okay, go ahead.
Does not.
Okay, I got it.
And we've been married 28 years. We desire that the property will go to whomever who survives. What's the best way to title that property? Can it be in a revocable trust and Jill, for example, so it's Jack Revocable Trust and Jill as owners? My concern there is the revocable trust will continue living on, and if I die first, will I still be on the property?
All right. Do you all have a premarital agreement?
Yes.
Okay.
Haven't looked at it in a long time.
All right. So let's assume that the premarital agreement says she waives all of her rights to your estate, including the homestead.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. That frees you to put the property deeded from you to your trust. So you can do a quitclaim deed of the property, all of it. It's just in your name now, right?
No, we haven't bought it. We're closing on it next month.
Okay, well, that allows you, if you choose, to buy it just in your name.
Name, and then if I survive, then quitclaim it to the trust.
Right.
Okay.
So you have multiple choices here, though, really. You could buy the property in joint names with right of survivorship, and then the survivor could put it in their trust. Now your wife could create a trust, and since you have a premarital agreement, you could put half in your trust and half in her trust. And you could give her the right to live in the house upon your death, and then your half. Do you have children from your first marriage?
Yes.
Do you want to make sure they get something upon the death of both of you and your wife?
Basically, we've decided that whoever survives will have it for as long have it outright. So I guess your first option would be the best one, just in our names, and then if she predeceases me, I will quit claim it over.
Yeah,
that's not a big deal, I gather.
All right, but what some people do, they want to guarantee their children from the first marriage get something, is they you would put your half in your trust, give your wife a right to live.
I got you.
Live there for life,
there.
And then when she dies,
and
your half goes to your children, and her half can go to her children. That is an option.
Okay.
That's one of your three choices, I would say.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
Have a great day. Take care.
All right, for those of you who would like to have our contact information, like John, the previous caller, we don't charge anything for the first appointment. We have a toll-free number, 1-800-226-3529. That's 1-800-226-3529. We have multiple locations all over Florida. We do have an office in Zephyr Hills where John was calling from. We do have an office in Jacksonville where Russ, our first caller, was calling from. We have several offices in Pinellas, several in Hillsboro, several in Polk. We have offices in Trinity, in Pasco, Zephyr Hills. We have offices in the Bradenton, Lakewood Ranch area, and also, like I said, Claremont, Leesburg, the Villages, and Jacksonville, St. Augustine areas. Again, our toll-free number, no cost for that first appointment, 1-800-226-3529. That's 1-800-226-3529. If you'd like to email me for information or just tell me you'd like to make an appointment, have someone call you, my email address is Joe, J-O-E, at attypip.com. That's Joe at attypip.com. Let's go to Ann in Haines City. Hey, Ann.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Hello. Fine, thank you. I have a question. My sister-in-law passed away and left me a home. She was under Medicaid, so it's in the hands of a lawyer, and he says, we never owned the property. Is this correct?
All right, say that again. I'm sorry.
My sister-in-law passed away, and I'm a beneficiary of her home.
Right.
And she was under Medicaid at the time, and so we have an attorney that is handling it. And he says, we never owned the property at all. Is this correct?
Your sister never owned the property at all?
No, we never. We are the beneficiaries. But he says we never owned the property at all because of Medicaid.
Okay, is the property a home? Is it real estate?
Yes.
Well, my opinion is the homestead is free from the claims of creditors, and if it's left to a bloodline relative, it can be left to them and not be taken by the state for Medicaid medical cost purposes.
Okay, now she doesn't. Okay, this was what we were told. The attorney says, well, the property never belonged to us anyway because of Medicaid. Now, I know they have to be paid. The house is up for sale, okay? And I know they have to be paid first. He says his comes off the top first. Is that correct?
Okay, so the home. Does the will say the home is left to you? And he's saying he's going to sell it and you don't get anything?
Well, he's going to sell it, yes. It's up for sale now. But Medicaid, he says his comes off the top first. What's left, evidently, is Medicaid. This is correct.
Yeah, Medicaid has to be reimbursed if there are other assets. I would say that's correct. Does the will or trust say that any interest in the property and describe the property goes to you?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I would have an attorney look at that. I think it's possible that that property might just have to be transferred to you. And then we'd have to discuss how he's going to be paid.
Okay, now he is the administrator of the will.
Okay.
Okay, so he is the administrator. Okay, so what I understand is it has to be sold, and that's true. And I understand that Medicaid...
No, well, that's not necessarily true.
Okay.
It depends on what the will says. If the will says any interest in that property goes to you, I think that would give you a position to argue, just transfer the property to me. You might have to negotiate his fees and then how he charges to... proceed with the homestead is different attorneys treat that differently on how
well, somehow or another he's put this in his name. Somehow or another he has done that. How can he do that?
Well, you're going to need to have an attorney sit down and review all this with you to make sure everything's being done correctly, I think, and give you peace of mind that it was done correctly.
Okay, well, I'm just confused.
He could not have transferred the property to his name.
Then how can he Okay.
Well, because he has the legal authority as being appointed by the court as the personal representative of the estate to be in charge of the estate and sell the property.
Yeah, that is what he has done, yes.
Yeah, so that's fine. I mean, he was named as a personal representative. That's okay. His job. His
okay.
job also is to follow the instructions in the will. So
okay.
I might have to look at the will very, very carefully to see how the property is supposed to be distributed to you. And then maybe work out some type of fee agreement with him for his work.
Okay.
Or basically... Basically, he would also have the right to, if you didn't agree with, say an attorney gets involved and there's some dispute about his fee and there's some dispute about whether he has the right to sell the property when the will says transfer to you, then all that would just have to be worked out. He would have the option to resign as personal representative and let the next appointed, the next person named in the document.
Well, if he done that, then his fee would have to be paid immediately, correct?
Not necessarily. No, I mean, there might not be money in the estate to pay the fee.
Okay. Well, there is not. There
okay.
is not.
Well, that would have
until
to be that would have to be worked out with him. So, it goes back to what I'm saying, though. The will needs to be reviewed by another attorney. Have another set of eyes on there to discuss your rights.
Okay. Good enough. Okay. All right, sir. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right, let's go to Lloyd in Tampa.
Yes, good morning, Joe.
Good morning.
My quick question is, I hope it's quick, what is the executor of a will named that has a will and the person dies, what is the first thing they do? Do they have to come back to the attorney? Who do they see to start being able to write checks and do what it?
Yeah, well, the person named in the will who's they're nominated to be the personal representative. So, what an estate planning attorney is going to do is to take the will, take a death certificate, file a petition with the court for the personal representative to be appointed. Legally, they're nominated in the will, so now they need to be appointed by the court with.
Right.
And then they get letters of administration, which gives them the power to deal with the assets in the estate. So I would say the first step towards getting appointed would be have an attorney file the will, file the death certificate, and do the petition for the appointment.
So in effect, go back to the trust attorney who filled it out.
Not necessarily. I mean, if you have your own attorney, you can choose any attorney you want to. It doesn't have to be the attorney
okay.
that did the document.
Is there any rough estimate of what that cost?
Attorneys have different ways of charging. Some might charge you sit down with the attorney, and attorney understands what's in the estate. They just charge you a flat fee. That's what we do a lot of times. The statutory recommended fee is like 3% plus cost. There could be some factors which could make it more. There could be some factors if the attorney wants to set a flat. You want to set a flat fee with the attorney, and the attorney agrees to do less.
3% of
the value of the value of the probate property.
Oh, okay. All right. Thank you.
I met with a young man yesterday. I met with him Thursday. His father died. The young man, I don't know, was in his early 20s, has no money. They just cut off the electricity to his father's house because nobody's paying bills. And they're going to cut off the power pretty soon, probably, and cut off the water pretty soon, probably. And the young man has no money. He was brought in by someone. The will was done, let's say the young man was 22. The will was done when the young man was like 14, so the will's like 8 years old. And, of course, the person named as the personal representative could not have been the son because he was too young at the time. So the person that was named as the personal representative of the will brought the young man in, and the personal representative that was named in the will resigned, which would have left the door open for the son to be appointed. But the young man didn't have any money at all to pay bills, pay the electric bill, pay the water bill, or even pay the attorney fee. So what I did, just to give an example of how I operate, I said, well, look, what are you going to do with the house? You're going to sell it? And it was an expensive house. I think it was like a $400,000 or $500,000 house with $200,000 or $300,000 mortgage still on it. She says, yes, I'm going to sell the house. I said, well, I'll work with you on this, and I will front the money to pay the water bill, electric bill, court cost, and you'll do a fee agreement where I get reimbursed all of the costs I'm advancing, you know, plus whatever fee we agree to. So I don't know. Attorneys can work in. You can hire an attorney to work with you, and some have flat fees and they don't budge too much from flat fees, and so others will work with you to do exactly what I just said I would do for this young man. So it's all different. You just have to get in there and to talk to the attorney and work out the best way for you, or make an offer that this is what I can do, and go from there.
Okay. Thank you, Joe.
All right. Thank you. You have a good day. Thanks for calling. Okay, let's go to Jeff in Ruskin.
Good morning, sir. How you doing?
Good morning. Doing good. And you?
Oh, I'm old and ugly.
All right, well, I can't see you, but you sound okay.
Well, my question is one of obtaining some legal assistance in a lawsuit regarding constitutional law. If you know of anybody who handles that sort of thing, a legal organization that specializes in suing the state to adhere to the U.S. Constitution.
All right, well, I'll tell you what. If you want to send me an email, I'll give you a couple of ways to find an attorney.
Okay, thank you, sir.
All right.
Let me see. Can I get your email address, please?
It's Joe, J-O-E, at attypip.com.
E-I-P.com. Thank you so much, sir.
Yeah, I can tell you, I was just thinking of your question there. One thing is probably going to be a larger law firm. You know, there might be even a regional law firm. But you could also call the Stetson Law School and ask to speak to the professor that teaches constitutional law and see if he would briefly discuss your case and see if the professor would give you a recommendation on who would be the best attorney in the area to handle that case.
Okay.
That would be one choice.
Basically, I feel that the voter, the Felon Voter Act is unconstitutional because it discriminates against immigrants.
Mm-hmm.
An immigrant has to wait 5 years. An immigrant has a clean record when they come to this country. They have to wait 5 years. Then they get a vote. Whereas a felon, as soon as he satisfies the requirements of his conviction, he immediately gets his voting rights back. That's not fair.
Yeah. Well, do you have funds to pay an attorney to fight that for you? Because, you know, it's going to be very expensive to fight a case like that, probably.
No, that's my problem.
Yeah.
I have the law on my side, but I don't have the money on my side.
All right.
I thank you for your help.
All right, well, no problem.
Something will come up.
All right, thank you.
You take care.
Thank you. All right, you're listening to Ask an Attorney All About Florida Law. We have about 10 minutes left in the show. If you'd like to call, you have a toll-free number, which is 877-943-9673. That's 877-943-9673. Phone lines are open. Let's go to Rick in Clearwater. Hey, Rick.
Well, hello.
Hello, thank sir. You.
Okay. And the way I got myself in trouble with a Social Security disability, it looks like. So I was wondering, see, what I did was I kind of fell apart when my mother died.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't opening mail and all. I had talked with the person, the guy handling my case. He said everything's fine, but get back with me soon. And, you know, on whatever was coming out of my mother's estate towards me. And now I broke a hip into the hospital, and then I discovered they had shut off my Medicaid. So I'm in a little, that's pretty threatening, mm-hmm. because it could eat up any funds I have, you know, doctor bills and all. So, and I'm worried about, you know, having problems with the hip in the future. I needed some kind of health care because I'm only 61. Do you know someone that you can refer that would, if I needed it and I was going to some hearing officer, mm-hmm. that could help represent me?
Yeah, if you, I don't have anyone in my firm that would do that, but if you want to email me, I'll send you a referral or two that could do that for you.
Okay.
My email address, it's Joe. Email address is Joe, J-O-E, at attypip.com. It's Joe at attypip.com. All right, Rick?
All righty.
All right, thanks for calling.
Thank you, Mike.
All right. All right, let's go to Susan in Indian Rocks Beach.
Hello.
Hey, Susan.
Yes. I have a question, but my mother recently passed away, and I was in charge of her trust. I had one sister, one married sister, and it ended up, everything was all set in there. We got into a disagreement, and my brother-in-law took the trust information from my house and would not give it back to me, went and got his own attorney who he wanted to take care of it. Well, this was upsetting. I tried to keep everything on a level key. I went to the attorney, his attorney, and talked with him. He was mm-hmm. very nice, and I just felt that everything was in perfect shape in the trust because it had been reviewed the last few years by her attorney. Anyway, so I decided not to get an attorney, just to leave it with the attorney that he preferred and work with him. And he seemed very comfortable to work with, and why get two attorneys when I felt everything was comfortable? Okay, fast forward to the end, we agreed there was... It was a house that was going to be sold. Everything was all patterned out in there. We were both happy with it. There was some rental property involved that my brother-in-law felt he should have gotten more money than he did in the settlement. But we went ahead, we finalized it, and when in the ending, I had written in the, you know, my mother had written in the back of the book where you can write stuff down, what some things you want to give to other people.
Yeah, that's called a personal represent, separate writing from the will. Yes.
Well, she had written in there she wanted to give me her daughter, who had taken care of her in her elder years, $10,000.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's... That separate writing sheet is not for dollar amounts. It's for non-titled personal things.
That's what I thought, so I did not pursue that.
Mm-hmm.
I also had, when my mother went into the nursing home the last year, I had liquidated from her money.
Yeah. And we've got 1 minute left here. So
yeah, about $10,000 for me, $10,000 for my sister, and at the end, my brother-in-law says, you are not getting that $20,000 back. There was no writing in the trust about that. So that is just...
Well, I'm sorry. We have more than 1 minute, so there's no rush.
Okay, that's just him against me saying...
Well, if it's not in writing in the document, you're entitled to a fee, though, for your services.
Right, and I did not bring that up. What is the fee?
Well, a typical fee is usually 1 to 1.5%.
Okay. Just curious.
So,
but I mean, would I have any case in court to pursue that money?
No, it's not a proper way to devise you money in a separate writing sheet.
Well, no, okay, forget that. This was also like when you have to get, she had to get rid of her money that she had cash on hand.
Uh-huh.
And so I gave myself $10,000 and my brother-in-law $10,000. That was the end of her money.
Okay, what does the will say to do with the money, though? Or what does the trust say to do with the money?
That was not. There was no note in the trust about that money.
No, there's always, well, there should be a distribution clause upon the death of the grantor, you know, pay the bills.
This was before she died.
Yeah, but the trust document has an instruction on where the money goes. Trust documents have distribution clauses of where the money goes upon death.
No, this was before she died.
She had a trust before she died, though, right?
She had a trust. She had
the trust document says where the money goes when she dies.
She had $20,000 left in the bank when she went into the nursing home.
Yeah.
To be able to get onto Medicaid or Medicare.
So was that Was that money transferred to like a personal service contract? It was something was done with it.
The money was taken and put in my brother-in-law's bank.
Under a personal service contract, or it had to be titled somehow?
No. See, there was no recording of it. I did it.
All right. And there's something missing here. So, I mean, I don't...
Right.
I can't give you an answer because there's a missing piece here that you don't know the answer to.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Sorry. All right, you're listening to Ask an Attorney All About Florida Law. I'm Attorney Joe Pippin. We have about 4 minutes left in the show. If you have a toll-free number, 877-943-9673. That's 877-943-9673. Phone lines are open. We do have an office in Lakeland, and we do offer appointments to review documents and discuss matters like that. We have several offices in Pinellas, Hillsboro, Polk, offices in Manatee, Trinity, Leesburg, Davenport. Polk County is Lakeland and Davenport. If you have a legal question or you'd like for us to review documents, there's no charge for the first appointment. You can make a toll-free call to get a free appointment there at 1-800-226-3529. That's 1-800-226-3529. You can also email me for an appointment, just a request. Email me at Joe, J-O-E, at A-T-T-Y-P-I-P .com. So that's Joe at A-T-T-Y-P-I-P .com. We're here doing Ask an Attorney All About Florida Law every Saturday morning at 8 o'clock. We're heard on multiple stations around Florida. We also stream live on WeBeam TV, who carries the program. You can go there for it's an internet television site where they have our program along with many other programs. We also stream live on Facebook. You can go to my law office page, my Ask an Attorney page, the Joseph Pippin page, and catch parts of that. We also video the whole show, but during the course of the week, we'll take out some of the questions. And your question could be one of those, actually. We'd take out and post an individual question that we think would be helpful to an audience to learn more about estate planning. So if you'd like to contact our offices, again, we have a toll-free number, 1-800-226-3529. If you'd like our free estate planning poster sheet, we'd love to mail that to you. So what you do is call with your name and number. You could actually call this weekend and leave your name and number on our phone if you like. 1-800-226-3529. Go to extension 200. That's 1-800-226-3529, extension 200. Or you can email me your name and address and ask for the poster sheet at Joe, J-O-E, at A-T-T-Y-P-I-P .com. Thanks so much for listening to Ask an Attorney All About Florida Law. Back next week, the same time. You have a safe weekend. So long.